This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. Bugfest 2020 is happening right now. My opportunity each year to ask all of the big questions about insect life. The focus for this year's Bugfest is flies. And as common as they are, you may be surprised at how much you don't know about these amazing creatures. For instance, did you know that mosquitoes are part of the fly family? There you go. I did not. And there is much, much more to learn, and so good that we've got two insect experts here right now. The dragonfly woman, Christine Goforth, head of the citizen science at North Carolina Museum of Natural Sciences. Hi, Chris. Welcome back to State of Things.
Hello.
Good to have you. Matt Bertone is with us, director of the Plant Disease and Insect Clinic at the North Carolina State University. Hi, Matt.
Hi, Frank. How's it going?
Well, pretty good. I didn't know the mosquitoes were considered flies, Matt, which I guess raises a larger question. What makes a fly a fly?
Yeah, there's lots of different flies. In fact, over 150,000 described species in the world. And flies are insects that go through complete metamorphosis, which means they have a larval stage. And they only have two wings. Their hind wings are actually modified into little gyroscopic organs.
So this is interesting. Hind wings. I mean, I didn't really think about this. So most flying insects, Chris, have four wings. Is that it, or at least two pairs of wings? I never really thought about it.
Yeah, pretty much all insects that have wings are going to have four, and the flies are really special because they only have the two.
So what's a match? You told us about maybe vestigial. So what happened to those two wings, and how come they changed? Nature usually has a pretty good reason for that kind of thing.
Yeah, not exactly sure. We do know that there are some other closely related groups in the fossil record that also reduced their hind wings, but it just is probably something that happened, and it was beneficial for them, and they kind of took off with it.
All right.
No pun intended.
So mosquitoes now, we talked about the fact that the mosquito is a fly, and I guess this really gets into the function of flies, because when I think of flies and then you add mosquito to the mix and you say, well, they're part of the family, offhand, there's really nothing about flies I like. Do you know what I'm saying? I mean, when I think about them, I don't think fondly of them. I'm just going to go flat out and admit that. But they're really important. And when you think about their role in the ecosystem, Chris, maybe I'll put the question to you, and Matt, you can hop on. But they're really very important, and they perform a vital function, don't they, Chris?
Yeah, there are a lot of different ways that flies are beneficial to us. One really important function in the environment is they're food for a lot of other animals, including other insects and birds and fish and bats and other things that we like to have around. And they are also pollinators in a lot of cases. And so we think about bees and butterflies mostly when we think of pollinators, but there are a lot of flies that pollinate as well. We have a lot of them that help break down dead materials. There are ones that filter water, so they're helping clean water in aquatic environments. There are so many different things that flies can do for us and things that we really depend on them for.
The pollinator part I'd never thought about either. The fact that they are, you know, important pollinators right after bees. And in fact, they may have been some of the original pollinators, right, Matt? I mean, flies go back 240 million years, am I right?
Yeah, and them and some other groups of more primitive or more old insects were the first pollinators before the flowering plants came out. And bees really didn't evolve until the flowering plants came out.
So a lot of the plant kingdom owes a great debt to the earliest flies 240 million years ago.
And actually, one of the specific pollinators I talked about earlier this week is chocolate. Is the plant that makes chocolate is pollinated only basically by flies.
Wow, this is amazing. So now I've learned more about chocolate and cocoa. Is this cocoa? Because also,
yes.
You know, like no monkeys, no chocolate, right? I mean, this is fascinating. So one fly is the pollinator, and if monkeys didn't sit up in the tree and bust open the pods and spit out the seeds, they would never grow again. This is utterly fascinating. So you got one fly and one monkey, and otherwise no chocolate. This is fascinating stuff. I'm glad you joined us on the show. They also, I mean, you talk about mosquitoes and the idea that they are sucking the blood out of me, which is kind of irritating. But also, Chris, again, the role they play in the food chain. Talk about the role of sort of transferring food up and down the food chain.
Yeah, so I work on aquatic insects, so I think about the aquatic ones more than the terrestrial ones, but they are really important in aquatic habitats for filtering particles out of water, and so they are using specialized mouthparts, a lot of times these fan-shaped gathering structures, to grab large particles, and they chew them up, send them through their digestive system, and then come out the back end as a different type of particle that something further down the food chain is able to use. So they're really cycling nutrients through the environment, and a lot of the decomposers do that as well. So when they're breaking down dead plants, dead animals, other things, you know, they're helping take that material and turn it into something else that can be used by another animal or plants or bacteria or fungi. They're so important. And they do so many really, really valuable things.
Obviously, they've developed their own specialties because I think, Matt, you said there's something like 150,000 species. So they're highly specialized. Hey, I have a question for you. This is just me now, but mosquitoes, for instance, when we lived in the D.C. area and again down here in North Carolina, they will not bite me. I've done experiment. I watch the mosquito will hover, and I can hold my hand, and I watch it hover over my hand, going, "I'd love to get a bite of this," but then it's, "I don't think so." It's got this. Then it's like this neurotic, jerky mosquito that won't land. And I can raise my hand, and it goes up, and I lower my hand, it goes down, it won't bite me. However, when I go back to my native buffalo, it's like, "Oh, here's Frank. Bring a fork." They're all over me. So the buffalo mosquitoes love me. Southern mosquitoes stay away. One of you has to have an answer to that.
It sounds like we need to study you, put you in a lab and study you. But really, first of all, it's probably that there were different species affecting you up there versus down here. And the other thing is that there are all different types of cues that mosquitoes home in on particular people. It could be CO2, it could be smells, and it could also be there's been hypotheses about blood type and things like that go either way. But yeah, there's all different factors that make you more attractive or less attractive to mosquitoes.
I think it's garlic. I think the buffalo mosquitoes, owing to the huge Italian American population up there, among which I am one, they've gotten used to the garlic. And down here, it's like, whoa, what's that? And they stay away. I think that's what's going on. But you probably aren't going to write a paper on that. Let's talk about where they lay their eggs, Chris, because I know that a lot of flies like to lay their eggs in water. Do they need moisture to lay their eggs, or can they lay eggs almost anywhere?
It probably depends on the species very heavily. A lot of aquatic species will lay their eggs in or near water. But there are other things that are parasitic, too. So they'll lay their eggs inside of other insects and other animals. There are ones that will lay their eggs, on plants. It really depends on the species and kind of what their habitat is and their kind of place in the environment as far as where the eggs are going to end up.
Tell us more about these parasitic species, Matt. They're fairly interesting, right? And there are lots of them, which, again, you don't think about flies as being parasites for not only other animals, mammals, but also other insects, right?
Yeah, so other than the blood feeding, the ectoparasites that feed on the outside, there are lots of flies that are parasitoids or parasites internally. So parasitoids kill their host, and there are flies that parasitize lots of other insects, spiders, roly-polies, and even earthworms and other worms. So they do a lot of different things there. Some that parasitize snails as well. And then there are even ones that live in larger animals, like the botflies, whose larvae live inside the skin of mammals, including humans, the human botfly in the tropics, the American tropics.
And sheep and pigeons as well, and they're a vector for sorts of malaria that are experienced with those animals. Am I right about that?
Yeah, so malaria is transmitted by mosquitoes. And it can go into other types of animals when they bite. The parasites, the internal parasites, the maggot actually lives inside the skin.
Yeah, we didn't really talk about the life cycle of a fly as well. Do all flies go through the same stages of metamorphosis?
Yes. So flies go from an egg to a larva. The larvae are like the caterpillars of moths and butterflies, but All fly larvae are completely legless as far as true legs. Some of them have fleshy legs to grab onto substrate. Some of the aquatic ones do that. But mosquito larvae don't look like maggots typically, but many of the higher flies have a maggot form, which is basically legless, headless, just feeding machine.
Matt Bertone is Director of Plant Disease at North Carolina State. Chris Goforth is the Head of Citizen Science at the North Carolina Museum of Natural Sciences. And we're talking about them today, talking to them today, because it's Bug Fest. And here's what's going on, a virtual infestation that I think is going on right now. I think there's a bug cooking workshop at this very moment. But then the Dragonfly Woman tomorrow from 10 to 11 with some fun facts about aquatic flies. Festival wraps up on Saturday, so you can make sure you can check out Matt and Chris, who will co-present Beautiful, Brilliant, and Bizarre Flies that you can find in North Carolina. That's on Saturday at 11 o'clock. I want to give you a few of those details, but we're not done yet because I want to ask you about a particular fly that I, in just doing research for this, the dance fly. This is, tell me more about the dance fly, because the little bit that I read in the Encyclopedia Britannica, particularly about its erratic movements in flight and the male's abdomen bearing a conspicuous genitalia in the posterior end. This sounds like the disco fly. Tell me more about the dance fly.
Yeah, dance flies are a really cool group of flies. They have so many different, they're called dance flies because many times they swarm. And they're interesting in that sometimes some species the males swarm and other species the females swarm to attract mates. The males will, some are called balloon flies, where they actually produce silk from their legs and wrap up prey to give as gifts to their lady friends. And then the female swarms, some of the species actually inflate their abdomen so they look much bigger and more beautiful to the males. And that's just a few of the types. There's so many ones out there.
Is this common for fly, this kind of mating behavior, sort of wrapping up a dead fly and handing it to your date? Is this common, this kind of mating ritual, or only a few species exhibit this kind of behavior?
So there are some other insects that do that too, and then also some other insects that produce these gifts from themselves. But these dance flies, they actually are funny because some catch the prey and present it to the female unwrapped. Some catch the prey and wrap it up in the silk. And then there are some sneaky males that actually will wrap up nothing in silk and present it to the female. And by the time she finds out, they've already gone on their date.
No, that is so great. That's like sticking you with the bill at dinner. Wow, that's amazing.
Not great for the female, I guess, but...
Well, but it's gone 240 million years. You know, you'd think by now you'd catch on, right? Or somebody would tell you. There should have been a meeting. Somebody, hold it. Come over here. Don't do this. Look, there's nothing in there. But there must be something about the package that makes it attractive, or this would not have gone on for that long. Chris, let me ask you about the moth fly.
Yeah, moth flies are one of my favorite flies. I just think they are the best thing ever. They start off life as these larvae that live in really pretty filthy habitats. They're frequently called sludge flies or drain flies because they will lay their eggs in drains. They like really mucky fluids down in the bottom of drains and can reproduce in those areas. And so they're really pretty gross. You'll see them a lot of times in like hospitals and gyms, places where people are rinsing a lot of fluids off their bodies. And then they turn into these adorably fuzzy little flies that are just hanging out on walls. And you can find them at lights at night, maybe in your house, definitely in gyms. I've seen a lot of them there. And they're just so cute. And it's really amazing to me that they can turn from this really kind of gross habitat larva into this beautiful, adorable fly as adults. There's just so much diversity in flies.
Can we find the moth fly around here? What's its habitat?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I find them at my lights at night. You know, entomologists like to check out lights at night. That's something we do for fun a lot of times. And so I've been doing a lot of that during the pandemic, turning my light on at night because I'm up a little bit later than I normally am, and can definitely find them there.
Yeah, well, so we know what to wrap up for you if we were ever interested. That would be, we just hand you a nightlight or something. So what else is going on? We got to get a sense of something that we might have missed. Matt, are there some other fascinating flies or one or two that you might want to highlight?
Oh, man, that could take all day. But, I'll give my talk on Saturday at 11 and just about things we can find locally. But there are just so many amazing flies out there. And they're really kind of, even though they're kind of physically weak organisms, they are one of the hardiest groups of insects out there. In fact, there are some species that almost dry completely in deserts as larvae and then rehydrate and become adults later on. There are ones that live on the ocean surface. There's even the largest organism that, or animal that spends its entire life on the surface of Antarctica is actually a fly. It's not huge. It's only about 6 millimeters long, but penguins and all those other things go back to the sea, whereas this fly never leaves Antarctica.
It's amazing. That's it. You can find them all over the globe, and yet you're going to focus too, Chris, on what we can find right here in our own backyards, right? You've got a Party on the Porch event. Tell us about that.
Yeah, on Saturday night, we're doing a virtual Facebook Live event where we will have multiple museum staff showing off the things that are coming to light they set up at their own homes. And so we will be showing off some cool things that are coming to our lights as staff people. And then we're inviting the public to participate with us. They can turn on their own lights and see what comes. They can take pictures. They can submit their photos through the Facebook comments, and we will help them identify the things that they see. And we just want to get people out there exploring these nighttime animals that they might not even think about otherwise, and give them a chance to actually participate in this really fun activity with us that we all really enjoy doing.
Bugfest, a virtual infestation happening right now until Saturday. You can go to our website for a full schedule and some gorgeous photos of those flies that we've talked about. Chris Goforth is the head of citizen science at the North Carolina Museum of Natural Sciences. Matt Bertone is director of plant disease and insect clinic at North Carolina State University. Chris, Matt, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to The State of Things. Our website is stateofthings.org. I'm Frank Stachow.